February 29th to order. It happens only once every 4 years. Just had to get one joke on today. We'll start with our first order of business, which is the approval of the February 22nd minutes. Representative Bernie, have you had a chance to order the minutes?
I have, and it looks like we spelled Rochester Public School wrong. So.
Okay, we will correct that. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It also looks like fellow is misspelled.
Okay, great. This is why we have folks look at it again. Thank you. We've got the two corrections on the minutes. So with that, Representative Brennan, would you like to move the February 22nd minutes with corrections?
Yes, please.
Thank you. And are there any questions at all on the rest of the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. With that, the minutes for February 22nd are approved. Members, I am going to hand it over to Representative Clardy, the first bill on the agenda is mine. And then we'll get going here. Our next agenda item is House File 3378. Chair Yu Kim, would you like to move the House File 3378 before the committee with the intention of getting a bill for possible inclusion in the education finance bill?
Yes, thank you, Chair Clardy. I will move House File 3378 in front of the committee.
Okay, you may present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Clardy and committee members. Thank you for hearing House File 3378. This bill is the extension of a bill that we've heard in past last sessions to invest in work at the Barr Center, Barr Center's doing in our schools. As you might remember from the presentation last year, the Barr system is recognized as a highly successful way to improve student achievement and the school environment for both educators and students. Barr, which means building assets and reducing risks, achieves results through on-site training, supports aligning a system within an existing school structure. Training materials focused on building intentional student-to-student, teacher-to-teacher relationship, teacher-to-student relationships, professional development, and coaching. This program is structured to be implemented with the school for over 3 years. So last year, we were able to give the Barr Center $5 million to deliver programming for 18 schools. And as you can imagine, there were many more schools that applied to work with the Barr Center than there was money available. In House File 3378, we would invest another $10 million in 2025, one-time money, to deliver evidence-based, research-validated programming to 36 more schools across the state. Madam Chair, we have the Executive Director of Barr here today to talk about what they were able to accomplish with last year's appropriation. We also have two school leaders from Stillwater Area Schools here to share their experience with Barr. And finally, there are letters of support and members' packets from other school districts across the state. So here I have my first testifier, Angela Jarabek, the founder and executive director of Barr Center, who is joining our committee again to talk about what Barr has accomplished so far with the money this committee provided last year.
Good morning and welcome. Could you please state your name for the record?
Yes, my name is Angela Jarabek. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. As referenced, I'm Angela Jarabek. I developed the Barr model when I was a counselor, as well as I'm now the executive director of the Barr Center. I'm honored to be back testifying about the work that has already been accomplished, as well as continue to talk about the need as we have come forward. Thank you so much. Last year, for the $5 million, has been enabled to have us serve 18 schools. These schools were selected from over 50 schools that applied, and the schools are all across our state. They're in rural settings, urban settings, as well as suburban settings. We're serving elementary, middle, and high schools. So as a reminder, Barr has over 20 years of evidence. We are one of the most researched models in the nation. Providing this coaching and training to our teachers utilizes the staff that we already have in our schools and consistently is able to show higher test scores in both math and reading, higher graduation rates, lower discipline rates, higher attendance. So we have 20 statistically significant outcomes, 14 for students, as well as 6 for the adults. Those are all proximate measures for teacher retention. I'm continuing to be able to testify across the nation more and more about how we have to tend to our staff that are there, and this model helps support them. I think one of the key pieces is we also support all of our students. The largest effect sizes are for the students who are farthest from opportunity: Black, Latino, and students living in poverty. This model serves them the most. So I think one of the key pieces is when I founded this model, it was based on the fact that I had 5 years running that half the ninth graders were failing a course. I knew it wasn't the students, and I knew it wasn't my colleagues. I absolutely determined it was a system that we are trying to work in. It's an archaic system. It's a factory model. We have to change it. VAR is a model that helps disrupt that and focuses us on relationships and data. So with that, I am thrilled that we have Stillwater District here to present to you their experience with VAR. They're going to talk about what they've been able to learn and the needs that they currently see. So with that, the Stillwater leaders, please come forward.
Welcome. As you begin your testimony, would you please state your name?
Dawn Waller-Lewick. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Dawn Waller-Lewick, and I'm the Director of Schools at Stillwater Public Schools. Our district serves over 8,000 students at 12 schools. Currently, we are implementing VAR at Stillwater Area High School, Oakland Middle School, Lake Elmo Elementary, Afton Lakeland Elementary, and Brookview Elementary. Since we began implementation at the high school in 2017-18, Stillwater Area High School saw a decline in ninth grade failure rates from 14% to 6.5% in its first year of implementation. It has stayed below 7% since that time. When the opportunity arose for one of our elementary schools to be the first pilot in this country, my colleague and principal of Lake Elmo, Stephen Gordy, jumped at the opportunity. Last year, he and his teachers testified on the tremendous impacts VAR system has had academically with improved MCA scores in both math and reading throughout those years. Through private philanthropic funding, we were able to expand to another elementary, Afton Lakeland. While our overall MCA reading and math scores have been on the decline in our district, both Lake Elmo and Afton Lakeland, which are our two VAR schools, were our two VAR schools, saw an increase in proficiency for 2023. We attribute much of this success to our merging of VAR and our MTSS systems and trying to make that not another thing. VAR's framework and tools have made our MTSS system stronger, more effective, and more efficient, especially at our elementaries, and we're moving that into our secondaries. We've seen strong impacts on students' academic and social and emotional growth. With VAR training and coaching, our teachers talk about students on an asset-based lens rather than a deficit. It has helped to turn the culture with our staff. VAR helps teachers discuss every student, and when an intervention is identified as being needed, VAR helps teachers to be laser-focused in getting to the root cause so that that intervention is effective. We want to ensure that all of our students have an equitable experience. Therefore, last year when the legislative funding was announced, Stillwater applied for its remaining middle and elementary schools. We were fortunate enough to receive funding for Oakland Middle School and Brookview Elementary. For that, we are very grateful and thank you. We also applied for a NED grant and received it to implement VAR at Stillwater Middle School because we feel so strongly that both of our middle schools should be equitable for our students. But we still have 4 more elementary schools and we need the state's help. Our bar schools are seeing better test scores, better attendance, better behavior, and better teacher engagement. All of our schools deserve this, as do the other applicants from districts and charters around the state who applied last year and didn't receive funding. We strongly urge you to support this bill. I'd like to now introduce my colleague, Melinda Major, principal at Brookview Elementary, to share how BAR is helping her teachers and students.
Great, thank you, welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Okay. Melinda Major, thank you. Madam Chair, committee members, as stated, my name is Melinda Major, and I'm principal at Brookview Elementary School in Stillwater Area Public Schools. Our school serves over 600 students pre-K through 5, and our student demographics are 48% students of color, 52% white, 12% are multilingual learners, and we have about 30% that would qualify for free-reduced meals. We began our implementation of BAR this school year with funding from the 2023 legislature and are already seeing a shift in how teachers are talking about kids through a strength-based lens. We used to believe we needed to support each student in their learning and growth. We now strongly believe we need to also support our educators' learning and growth as well. BAR does both. Because of BAR, we are seeing immediate results in many areas, such as the way teachers look and review data to support each student in a way that is strengths-based, not only academically, but social emotionally. Within the small and big block BAR meetings, each and every child is supported throughout the school year. The BAR system has been very efficient and effective. Teachers feel it is a valuable use of their time during a very difficult time in education. And this is a system, not just a program. It's making a difference. To give you an example, a student was struggling at our school. Through BAR, it was determined we would set up a collaborative meeting with parents to discuss what barriers might be in place for attendance. We also implemented a daily check-in and check-out with our school social worker, and the student was able to receive reading intervention with our reading intervention teachers. Teachers also received job-embedded professional development via BAR coaches and facilitators. Just last week, a BAR facilitator was in our classrooms and provided feedback to teachers. It's changing the way we teach and interact within the classroom each and every day and within the school. It's changing the way we look at data and the students and their needs. With BAR, we also have what's called U time in every classroom. The last school-wide U time was called Person of the Year. Every student shared what they wanted to become, and it was strengths-based and powerful. Students want to become doctors, Olympic athletes, the best reader ever, veterinarians, and even the next Taylor Swift. Attendance has increased by 10% this year. There has been an 8% reduction in behavior referrals to our green room. Students and staff are smiling more. BAR has created a positive and empowering culture at our school, and we are just getting started. Thank you again for funding this important work in our school. And I am truly hopeful that my colleagues in the 4 remaining elementary schools within our district and all interested schools across the state can access this system and ensure all of our students can achieve to their full potential in their academic, social, and emotional growth. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We have no members of the public that signed up to testify for House File 3378. Are there any questions for House File? Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Joachim, for bringing this bill forward. Thank you for our visitors from Stillwater Area Schools. Many of you know that when I'm not here, I'm a teacher at Stillwater Area High School, and I do want to just provide a brief endorsement for our program at Stillwater Area High School. We're a couple of years into this path. Approximately 2,900 students, a couple hundred adults in the mix. We are a small village, and structure and a culture to ensure that every child is known and supported. I think the shortcut that many folks take, and that I was so naive to believe before I became well-versed in BAR, is that this is an opportunity to talk about students who are struggling. It is not that we talk about every student. And it's provided us with the opportunity to take a large school structure and make it feel like a small place where everybody's known. So a strong and full-throated endorsement here, and I hope that folks will take a close look at this and get any questions they may have answered.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Joachim, for just recognizing the importance in delivering this. I want to give a special shout out to our Two River High School students that are tuning in, because this BAR program was vocalized and amplified when we took a visit to Two Rivers not too long ago on how important it is for the students to feel valued on how they want to learn and be mentored. So, my mic is kind of making quite a bit of noise here, but I want to make some noise for BAR, and well done. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So thank you to the testifiers. I appreciate you coming. So full disclosure, one of my colleagues wrote a letter of support. Well played to advocate to him to do that. So we have BAR in my district, and you can read the principal's testimony, but he speaks positively both in this letter, but just when I'm having personal conversations with him as well. One of the things I appreciate is the asset lens that BAR looks at, and looking at all of our students and our staff from an asset standpoint. So that's a positive thing. My concerns about this aren't necessarily with BAR, to be very blunt. It's about the choices we make at this table. So we talked about $5 million last year was allocated to BAR. It's going, kids are being served through that. Educators are being served. That's great. But it's $5 million less that we had available to flexibly fund our schools. $5 million, you divide it out over all of the school districts, it's $15,000. That may not seem like a lot, but that's money. And our districts are scrambling for dollars right now. And every choice that we make at this table that does not give money directly to schools that they determine is less, it's tying their hands. Just from a little bit of context, we allocated about $40 million to nonprofit groups last year. That's about $120,000 that school districts could have had. We could have increased the formula allowance, but we chose not to do this. One of the things that we've heard a lot this session is that we can't reverse 20 years of underfunding in one two-year term. And while technically I agree with that, but we certainly can't reverse 20 years of underfunding with over 65 mandates, with millions of dollars going to nonprofit groups and increasing the Department of Education budget. So with all due respect to BAR, I appreciate the work you're doing. But when we make decisions here at this table, we have limited resources to work with, and we need to be funding our schools and then getting out of the way and allowing them to make decisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Any other questions? Chair Joachim, do you have any final words for the bill?
Yes, thank you, Chair Clardy. I just want to thank folks for listening today and for being concerned about our schools. Representative Baker's right. We didn't fill the hole. 20 years of underfunding is hard to fill in 1 year. We filled about a third of it. And there's many different ways to fill that hole, and many different ways to meet our students' needs. So this program is not just a program. It is an investment in our students that will improve in how we deliver education. It's not just investing in a system, which is what our formula can do with the average daily membership. Our categoricals do dig down into investing in certain type of kids, but we've created a structure that doesn't always meet every child's needs.
and for the money that BAR, we're investing in BAR and some of the other programs that help partner with us to meet those child needs, that money comes back to us and results tenfold and has proven that over time. So that's my hope, that we have those important discussions at this committee table, is how do we begin to invest in our kids and not just a system. So thank you for listening. From pandemic recovery to chronic absenteeism to challenges with student mental health and teacher retention, we all know these are significant issues our districts are facing, and we have work to do, and part of this is that work. We can continue to build on the evidence-based BAR system to successfully address challenges in Minnesota schools. Like I said before, this is one kind of funding. A lot of what we need to invest in our schools is ongoing funding, so we can do both, walk and chew gum at the same time. So I just want to thank members again for your attention, and my motion would still be to lay over House File 3378 for possible inclusion in the education binding.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. So with that, we will be laying over House File 3378 as amended for possible inclusion. For possible inclusion in the education bill. And then I'll now hand back the gavel to Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Clark.
Yes, that would be the motion. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Hill puts forward House File 3822. He also has a DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author wishes. Would you like to move that forward?
Yes, I'd like to move the DE1, please.
Thank you. Representative Hill moves the DE1 amendment before the committee. Why don't you go ahead and just first explain the amendment, since it goes through the entire bill and toward the end we'll adopt the DE1. We'll adopt the DE1 right now. So, members, why don't we go ahead and just adopt DE1 so it gets in shape for the thought. Who would like to speak about it now? Would represent Phil, is that your motion?
That is the motion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, members. We're not going to have any questions on the DE1 that are quick before we have them explain it. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All the opposed, no. With that, the DE1 amendment is adopted. Representative Hill, proceed.
Well, thank you, Chair Joachim and members. Last year, during our 23 session, we moved forward with some legislation that allowed for the advancement of and the addition of programming for adults with disabilities through community education around the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Chair.
This expanded funding for community education for adults with disabilities was put into place to ensure that districts around the state who had an interest in expanding or offering the initial offering of such programming would have that opportunity. Before this extension, only about 65 school districts were eligible and after they had received approval from MDE. With this expansion, we've now recognized that the administrative process to distribute the funding to school districts is in need of an adjustment to ensure that the distribution is available across the state. This House File, House File 3822, clarifies that to receive this funding, school districts must accomplish or take part in the three following steps. Number one, a review. They must review the program with its Community Education Advisory Council every 5 years, must seek feedback from adults with disabilities and other community organizations that provide services for adults with disabilities, and must include program information in its required annual community education report. To share more, I'd like to bring forward our testifier to provide an overview of why this slight modification is necessary to ensure that these programs can move forward in communities throughout Minnesota. I'd like to welcome Mr. Corey Franson, who serves as the Director of Community Education for Elk River Schools
and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Corey Franson. Good morning, Chair Yukum and committee members. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today to speak on behalf of the support of the proposed amendments to the Adults with Disabilities Funding Reporting Process as proposed in House File 3822. As Representative Hill referenced, the 2023 legislature made some big changes in the field of community ed, helping us expand our high-quality services to all of the adults with disabilities across the state. Through that expansion, we just need to do some clarification on how that reporting process is done. So as Representative Hill referenced in House File 3822, we addressed that by issuing, stipulating that in order for those funds to be received, the community education departments would be reporting through a five-year program review with our citizen-led advisory councils, soliciting input from our community adults with disabilities and other community organizations offering services to those learners, and including programming data in our annual community education report, which is already in place. With that, I'm hopeful that the proposed changes to House File 3822 will have the clarity and participation data to help support our adults with disability learners as community eds continue serving our Minnesota lifelong learners. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Franson. With that, members, do we have any questions about the bill as amended? Representative Grisha.
Madam Chair. And just quickly, I noticed, just looking at the DE amendment, we've expanded out some of the requirements in the reporting. Where did that come from and what was the need for that? Just curious where that came from.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Thank you for the question, Representative Grisha, Lee Grisha. As we examined what districts needed to ensure that they could expand the programming, this came from feedback that we heard from districts and communities across the state and other stakeholders who are interested in expanding this type of programming for adults with disabilities.
Thank you. Representative Grisha, follow-up? With that, members, any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Hill renews his motion that House File 3322, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the education finance bill. With that, thank you, Representative Hill. Next up, we have Representative Clardy. We have House File 3998 up first. As you get settled, Representative Clardy, would you like to move House File 3998 before the committee today?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. With that, proceed.
Thank you, Chair Joachim and committee. This bill is to address special education teacher shortages, starting with the intermediate school districts, by creating a special fund, a special funding for special education registered apprenticeship program. So basically, the four intermediate school districts have come together to establish a registered teacher apprenticeship program to assist non-licensed staff to obtain licensure. And so the group that came together was education staff, union members, district staff, Minnesota State University at Mankato, AKA Mankato State formerly, and the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. And they've designed a program that engages apprentices, AKA paraprofessionals, in a job-embedded learning under guidance of a journey worker, which is an experienced teacher. And this is combined with related instruction from Minnesota State University at Mankato to meet standards of effective practice, content standards for emotional behavioral disorder, EBD, autism spectrum, ASD licensure, and the Department of Labor and Industry requirements. So upon successful completion of this program, the apprentice will earn a bachelor's degree and a dual license in emotional behavior disorder, EBD, and the autism spectrum, ASD. So this creative model will booster the educator workforce and help address the special education teacher shortage and provide high quality on the job training for educators. And I have a testifier here, Chair.
Thank you. Dr. Favor, would you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Good morning, everyone. I'm Dr. Michael Favor. I'm proud superintendent of ISD 917. We have a unique opportunity to partner with intermediate districts as well as non-member districts. In our intermediate districts, we provide services for students with special needs, alternative learning, and career and technical education. We also have a unique opportunity to collaborate with the other three. I do have a unique opportunity to collaborate with the other three intermediate programs. Those programs are ISD 288, ISD 287, and ISD 916. Together, we service just over 45 districts and partnerships. As noted, we have a teacher shortage in the state of Minnesota. Also, we have a huge teacher shortage for special ed, highly trained, highly qualified teachers. In ISD 917, part of what we say is innovation and collaboration is part of the work we do. So we collaborated, developed a collaboration with other intermediates. There's only four in the state, as I mentioned, to develop a program, an apprentice program, that's job embedded, where our paraprofessionals or anyone over 53 credits can come to work, learn the skills, pass the competencies, and become a licensed special education teacher. The shortages, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, has opted us as intermediates and other districts to start looking at international teachers that are highly qualified. But we believe opportunity to train our people who see the work and can become a part of the work daily helps us really not just recruit but retain. We have paraprofessionals who do not want to be teachers, but anyone that has the opportunity to become a teacher, this provides a sense of hope as well as a clear pathway in partnership with Mankato State. We're excited about what's possible. We're also looking at how we can help what we call our itinerant staff. These are staff that travel to different districts, visually impaired, students that are deaf, how we can better grow that pipeline as well. And we're looking forward to the opportunity to better serve. Once teachers are licensed, teachers are allowed to, we support teachers going to whatever district that's best for them so they're not pigeonholed to just one district. Because we have a saying at ISD 917, we belong to each other. And I quickly learned when I got there, it seemed like we were the St. Paul Saints to the Minnesota Twins. We were a feeder program because we train people best in our industry. We're a feeder program to bigger districts. And if that is the case, we need to continue to replenish our workforce.
Thank you, Dr. Favor. With that, members, are there any? We had one member from the public come up to testify on House File 3998. Laura Mogelson, Legislative Liaison, Minnesota Association of College of Teachers Education. Lauren Mogelson, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Laura Mogelson, and I am from the Minnesota Association of Colleges of Teacher Education. Thank you, Chair Joachim and members. Also, Representative Clardy, thank you for authoring this bill. I'm here to basically be reiterating a lot of what Dr. Favor shared here regarding this model of teacher preparation and the need. We do have a severe shortage of special education teachers in the state of Minnesota. Ongoing investments of this type are vital. This can build off of the special ed pipeline grant, which we're very grateful for, that we got passed last year. Multiple approaches, though, are needed to get more special ed teachers in the pipeline, including this apprenticeship model. It is an effective way for districts such as the intermediates to build their own staff up, help people attain higher degrees, earn licensure, and fill those very hard-to-fill areas around special ed. Representative Clardy described, there are many strengths to this apprenticeship model that should definitely not only help to prepare teachers well, but to keep them in the field, because we know that a well-prepared teacher is more likely to stay. And we also know that this is not just a recruitment problem. To Dr. Favor's point, this is a retention problem. So a well-prepared teacher who is supported is going to stay in the field longer. The apprenticeship model is one where the apprentice or teacher candidate or paraprofessional, however we want to refer to them, is mentored and prepared by a more experienced cooperating teacher who is, as the representative described, is called the journey worker in this model. They are also supported in the apprenticeship model, adding value to having a student teacher, because it's a lot of work to have a student teacher, but it can really be helpful to you as a special education teacher if it's an effective mentoring situation, and an apprenticeship model is just that. So as the Association of Colleges of Teacher Education, we are very supportive of this concept broadly, and partner, as in this case with Minnesota State Mankato, partner with districts and with unions as the related instruction provider. These are all new terms with the apprenticeship model. So we would just like to express our support of this and thank the representative for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Liaison Mogelson. With that, members, are there any questions from the table? Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the bill author and superintendent. Is that correct? Make sure I get the title on. How do you spell your last name? I don't pronounce it correctly.
F-A-V-O-R.
Okay, that's easy. Superintendent Favor, thank you. So a couple questions. Thank you for bringing the bill up, Representative Clardy. So we have an appropriation that's going directly to four school districts of $250,000. So that accounts for the $1 million. We have $30,000 that I'm assuming must be the 3% fees of the Department of Education. So first of all, to Superintendent Favor, does the $250,000 cover the costs on your end for this?
Dr. Favor.
Not totally. Okay. Part of the reason is we're also working with our Tier 1 and our Tier 2 teachers to move them towards, again, being more proficient and to better support our Tier 1 and Tier 2. The apprentice teachers are going to need some additional support to make sure that people are highly qualified and competent. We want to ensure that, and we need some additional funding to make that happen.
Representative Kreisha, follow up.
Thank you, Superintendent Favor. And will the individuals incur any costs as far as tuition? And so, is there any out-of-pocket costs for them that enroll in?
Dr. Favor.
No, there's not.
Okay.
Representative Kreisha, follow
and
up.
And last question. So you have $30,000. The money's already appropriated to the four school districts, so I just don't see a need for the Department of Education to be involved in this. So I'm wondering, Superintendent Favor, how about we just appropriate the $250,000 directly to you and add another $5,000 on top of that, so give each of you $255,000 and go around the Department of Ed. Could you administer this program on your own?
Dr. Favor or Representative Clardy? Representative Clardy.
I'm sure that that would be a great idea. I think the reason we have it structured this way is just for some safeguards around it.
Representative Kreisha, follow up.
Superintendent Favor, do you need safeguards? You seem like a very competent individual. I suspect your district could administer this on its own.
Representative Kreisha, I think school districts will say they will always need more money to do this, but Dr. Favor, if you want to answer that one last question, then we'll go to Representative Bennett.
I would say, I appreciate the compliment. I would say we do need safeguards. It's important that we get this right, because we're the model that I think future districts will replicate. And in order to get this right, we want to make sure we worked out any barriers for success for the apprentice or journey teachers.
Thank you, Dr. Favor. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not sure, maybe this is for the bill author, I'm not sure, but just curious, so that we've got the four intermediate schools in the metro and then our service cooperatives in rural. Is there an opportunity to expand this apprenticeship residency program to our, for special ed, for our service cooperatives? I know they have huge needs in this area as well.
Representative Clardy or Representative Clardy?
I'm going to have Dr. Favor speak to this.
Dr. Favor.
As someone who worked in a service cooperative, I really believe there's always opportunity for collaboration and expansion. What that looks like, I can't speak for the service cooperatives or the other member districts, other intermediates, but I do believe there's room for this. In a dream world, I would love to have our reach far beyond just intermediates so that we can serve and ready other, districts as they need special education teachers as well.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that. And I think this is a great program, so I would love to see it. You know, we want to try things out at certain levels and then our smaller functions, and then they're working well, expand them. So I hope we can expand this, because and talking to our service cooperatives, I live in the rural area, they have a great need for special ed teachers as well. So thank you for this. It sounds like a good program.
Thank you. Any other member questions? Seeing none, Representative Clardy, closing comments.
I just wanted to say that I'm really excited about this program. I also went on an alternative program to get my teacher license. The difference was that I already had a bachelor's degree. And working in schools, we see a lot of people that are just, you know, equal to what the teachers are doing in the school, and I'm speaking to myself, that just need that little support financially. And they're, you know, this is the best model, having that, you know, that on-the-job training. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. With that, Representative Clardy will renew her motion to House File 3998B, laid over for possible inclusion in education finance bill. And with that, Representative Clardy, stay put and move on to your House File 3360. And Representative Clardy, would you like to move House File 3360 before the committee for discussion?
Yes, I would.
Thank you. Representative Clardy moves House File 3360 before the committee. And Representative Clardy, I understand that you have an A1 amendment.
Yes, I do.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. Would you like to briefly explain the A1 amendment?
And I don't have a copy of it right here.
Someone's handing you one right now.
I believe the amendment is a clarification as to the scope of the people that would be involved. So it's not just school or private, it's school, community, and other partners.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none with that, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Clardy, go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. So the purpose of House File 3360 is a driver's education grant. It's focusing on students that are on free or reduced lunches or that qualify, I should say, for free or reduced lunches, because we know all students are getting lunches. Thank you, Representative. Okay. So the school can enroll students from 14 to 19 years old into a course that's provided by the school district, community education, or other providers, and pay the portion of the cost of the enrollment on behalf of the students. The school may pay the driver education provider $350 for each student who qualifies for free or reduced meals, and $150 for other students. The provider may charge a fee to the students for the remaining part of the program, if applicable. So each year, the Commissioner of Education will reimburse the school district for the total amount that the district has paid for these programs within a fiscal year. And a school district must apply for reimbursement in the manner in which the Commissioner of Education specifies. So there will be a driver's education work group, and in the driver's education work group will be commissioners from Department of Education, Public Safety, Employment, and Economic Development, and they must form a work group to study the driver education availability in the state and then also see what the need is. So each commissioner may name an additional person for the work group. And the Commissioner of Education must provide the staff support to convene the first meeting of the work group. And the work group must study the availability of access to the driver's education courses in Minnesota, analyze the geographic availability of courses, identify barriers for courses and participation for low-income students, and analyze a potential permanent funding source to expand the availability of the driver's education opportunities. So the report must also describe the status of the driver's education courses in Minnesota and recommend changes to increase students' access to driver education. The report must also recommend a permanent funding mechanism to expand the availability of driver's education for Minnesota low-income students. So with that, I also have a testifier that's available to speak to it.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Corey Franson. Good morning again, Chair Yukim and our committee members. Again, my name is Corey Franson, and I serve as the community ed director in the communities of the Elk River Area School District. I'm here today to share my experience and to support House File 3360, looking at driver's education grants and funding for our low-income participants. In my 16 years of experience, driver's education is the most expensive program that we offer through community education, and frequently we receive questions about fee assistance that we are just not able to offer due to our delivery models for the program. So I'm hopeful that through House File 3360, we'll be able to promote access and remove financial barriers for our low-income families to participate in our high-quality driver's education services through our school districts and community education. So I'm happy to answer questions, too, as a practitioner on how these programs are delivered. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Franzen. With that, I think the next testifier we have on the list is Linda Sloan, Executive Director of the Council for Minnesota of African Heritage. Please take a seat, state your name for the record, and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Yoakam and committee members. Thanks for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Linda Sloan. I am the Executive Director for the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, fondly known as CEMA. And I am testifying on behalf of CEMA and one of our community partners, the East Metro Civic Alliance. CEMA was created by the Minnesota Legislature to amplify the voices of our constituents, which would be African Americans as well as the African immigrant community. We advise the government on issues that impact our communities, and we support the equitable participation of our constituents in the resources of the state and the economy. First off, let me thank Representative Clardy for bringing House File 3360 forward, and I am asking this committee to support the bill. Income inequality, it shapes access to driver's education and licensed driving. Teens from wealthier households are more likely to participate in driver's education, while teens from low-income families are more likely to be prevented from getting a license because of the cost. This socioeconomic divide disproportionately impacts black teens and families. And I can tell you, I'm saying this from experience. I am from Chicago, and I got my driver's license paid for while I was in high school. And I know that that would have not been the case if it was not fully funded. Just in closing, access to driver's education can increase one's prospects for enjoying health and wellness, public safety, and upward labor mobility. For many, licensed driving means greater access to better quality jobs. So those jobs like at 3M, Medtronic, and some of those organizations that are in the suburban areas, our students would also be able to access those. It also provides access to housing, healthcare, education, and food resources. The Minnesota economy is best served when our state invests in measures that expand resource opportunities for all, not just for some. HF House File 3360 is a step in the right direction. I am asking you to please support House File 3360. Thank you for allowing me to speak and have a good day.
Thank you, Executive Director Sloan. Next up, we have some students from Youth Prize, or for people from Youth Prize. I'm sorry, I didn't see titles, so I wasn't sure. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Travis Matthews.
Could you please state your title, too, just so I
can... Yeah, I'm the Senior Youth Policy Fellow at Youth Prize.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Travis Matthews, and I'm the Senior Youth Policy Fellow at Youth Prize. Additionally, I'm a senior at Hamline University and serve as a student body president, probably the highest level of office I'll ever go for. I stand before you to express Youth Prize's strong support for House File 3360, but I also want to share my personal endorsement of the bill as a former foster youth who faced significant challenges in obtaining my driver's license. Growing up in Grand Rapids and aging out of foster care without a driver's license was an obstacle in my journey. It wasn't until my first year of college that I actually obtained my license, relying on friends, community members, and public transportation until then. Navigating the city without a license severely limited my options for living and employment opportunities, compounding the challenges of transitioning out of foster care. Reflecting on my experience, I know that many of my peers who age out of foster care also lacked access to driver's education. House File 3360 presents a critical opportunity to bridge this gap in our public safety system by providing funding for driver's education programs. If such support had been available during my youth, I could have benefited from professional instruction and guidance behind the wheel, which are essential for safe and responsible driving. Driver's education goes beyond teaching technical skills and instills critical knowledge about road safety and legal requirements, empowering young individuals to become responsible members of society. By supporting House File 3360, lawmakers have the chance to positively impact the lives of countless youth who deserve equitable access to driver's education. I urge you to consider the significance of this bill and the profound impact it can have on the lives of foster youth and other marginalized communities. Thank you for your attention, and I hope you will join me in supporting House File 3360. Thank you.
Thank you, Policy Fellow Matthews, and thank you for sharing your personal story. Go ahead and state your name and title for the record and proceed.
Sure. My name is Christy Snyder. I'm the Policy and System Transformation Officer at Youth Prize. Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. We are a state, Youth Prize is a state intermediary that is devoted to elevating youth voice and increasing equity for young people in Minnesota. I'm here to testify on behalf of House File 3360. Prior to the pandemic, only 15% of teens received driver's education through school, compared to 95% in the 1970s when I went to school. It was difficult for youth to attain pre-pandemic, but with the shifting world of work, it is even more imperative to obtain the driver's license as a needed employment credential. Young people cannot enter into many apprenticeships, work in the many bonding bills and infrastructure projects that you all will vote for this session, or even work in places that do not require a driver's license, require driving. Or post-pandemic, we rely on people driving even more for commerce. At Youth Prize, we refer to the driver's license as a license to work. It is the first needed credential for thrivable career pathways. It's also a racial equity issue. using national survey data, research identified that young people of color were 1.8 to 2.5 times more likely to be non-drivers than their white peers. While Minnesota does not collect race ethnicity on the driver's permit or license, we can look to Wisconsin to see how lack of access to driver's education creates huge racial disparities. A study in 2006 in Wisconsin showed that 18 to 24-year-olds had the worst disparities in the state of Wisconsin, with only 26% of African Americans and 34% of Latinos with valid driver's licenses, compared to 71% of their white peers. We're also seeing that that young people don't even understand that they need to get a driver's license. The narrative is that you turn 16 and start driving. We have generations of families that are not using a driver's license. I appreciate all efforts to make the driver's license more accessible. We know that we cannot have behind-the-wheel opportunities for young people without small businesses and community education. However, I would be remiss without asking if we could also provide funding to districts themselves to credential more teachers so it can be offered in the core of the day. Thank you so much, Representative, for your work on this critical public safety, workforce, and racial equity issue. And thank you, Chair, and the committee for considering this, and I hope you do support.
Thank you, Manager Snyder. With that, we have up next Pete Hosmer, Driving Education Association.
Thank
you.
Go ahead.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Committee members, my name is Pete Hosmer, and I serve as the Vice President of MDSEA. Now, MDSEA is the Minnesota Driver and Traffic Safety Education Association, so it is the professional organization for all driving instructors. We are at the front lines of driver's education in Minnesota. We are the ones that are training your students. We believe that there are thousands of students across Minnesota that cannot take driver's education because of limited financial resources. Daily, we are asked about funding for driver's education and how they could get help, and we're forced to tell them there really is no other options. There's two aspects I'd like to address, access and safety. Throughout all of Minnesota, we offer multiple ways for students to take driver's education. They can take in-person classes. They can take Zoom classes. They can now take fully online classes. The schedules are flexible, and students can miss and make up classes whenever it's needed. So there's no reason for a student not to be able to take driver's education because they have a job or they have sports or other activities. The only reason that we found that access is limited is due to finances. The typical driver's education program costs around $450. There are no county or state funds that are easily available for a teenager to access to help with those costs. I'm sure you all remember your driver's education experience. This is the first step we all took into adulthood. It opened a new world of possibilities for employment, for freedom, for increased responsibilities. A bill similar to this was brought by former Representative Ruth Richardson, and her research showed that having a driver's license is a greater predictor of full-time employment than having a diploma. So driving is also the most dangerous activity that we do every day, and we don't even think about it. We have to look at the safety of our students. Our most dangerous drivers on the road are our 18 and 19-year-olds who, by default, got a driver's license without any training whatsoever. We did pass driver's licenses for all last session, but that really is only for licenses for people 18 years and older. That doesn't apply to 16 and older because they still have to pay for driver's education. A few statistics. Minneapolis Public Schools is about 60% free lunch, and ironically, about 60% of their ninth grade students do not take driver's education. St. Paul Public Schools, they're around 70% free lunch, and again, around 70% of their students do not take driver's education. It's not just in the metro, also in greater Minnesota. I checked with Montevideo Schools, for example. They are about 50% free or reduced lunch. They're a little bit better. About 70% of their students in the ninth grade take driver's education. So I appreciate your time. I do think funding for driver's education really should be looked at this session, and I thank Representative Clardy for bringing this bill.
Thank you, Vice President Hosmer, for your testimony and for talking about the safety of this bill as well. Then last final testifier we have is Toby Harris. Please state your name for the record and title and proceed.
Yeah, hi, my name is Toby Harris, and I represent Progressive Pathways. I am a mom who, during the pandemic, had three teenage boys that needed to take driver's ed, and driver's ed was canceled at the time. At which point, looking into it more carefully,
I realized that having kids in Minneapolis public schools for 20 years, I looked at the situation and I didn't really realize that it was so expensive and that the driving schools were all kind of in the suburbs. So access and cost were absolutely a big deal for not only my own children, but all of their friends. And when I looked at my 18-year-old daughter and realized why most of her friends were in the same position of not being able to actually have behind-the-wheel lessons, actually have driving training, just try to pass their test and get a license. Most people were kind of just driving anyway. So it was during that point that I realized I should probably become a driving instructor and figure out how to help all of these kids in my life move forward. So it definitely was an important point for me to realize this is the socioeconomic disparity that these kids are facing, and that there's a lot that we can do. So when I realized all of the bills that you're putting forward, it's just so, so necessary. I think all of these other testifiers really laid it out well. The access to driver's ed is totally lacking, especially for the kids that are, the urban kids that are in the city. They're not able to get to the classes, even if they have a parent with a driver's license, even if they have a car in their family. These are all different barriers that they have to face. So having any kind of funding in place to help them pass that forward would be amazing. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Toby Harris. And then with that, I think we'll go to member questions. Folks, have any questions at the table? Everybody's very quiet this morning. Representative Sensenmira.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Clardy, for bringing the bill. You know, I'll just say, as someone who's also on the Transportation Committee and kind of similar to something that I said when we passed the driver's license for all bill, was that I wish and I am committed to, like, trying to build a public transportation system so that you don't have to have a license to work. I don't think that that is just a reality that we should accept. I think that's actually something we need to actively work on changing by making investments in our public transportation system. But while that is the case, I do believe that we need to make sure that we have equity in who gets a license and who is able to drive on the road safely. And so I just really want to thank you, Representative Clardy, for bringing this bill, and I will definitely be supporting it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmira. Any other further questions or comments? Seeing none, Representative Clardy, do you have final comments on House File 3360 as amended?
Yes. First of all, I wanted to just make a clarification on the amendment. Basically, instead of saying low or free or reduced lunches, it speaks to who qualifies under the national school program or lunch program.
Thank you, Representative Clardy.
This bill excites me because it just makes the roads really safe, and it gives access to students, because otherwise they can wait till they're 18 and just skip the whole education piece. So it's a safety and access program for all of us, and then also directly ties to employment opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. With that, Representative Clardy renews your motion that House File 3360 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Members, we've come to the end of our agenda. We will be meeting next week at all of our regular times on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday back here in the basement hearing room. And Tuesday, we have another treat for you again. March 5th, we have our Student Voices Day. So we'll have a lot of students here talking about how they're feeling in school and what they'd like to see. With that, Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the heads up for next week. Just, you know, looking to get on the record, we have the forecast that came out. Any renewed conversations from leadership or any changes in the level of enthusiasm for funding or a target that you might see?
Well, since the forecast, Representative Crescia, just came out about an hour ago, and I've been here, not that I know of, but I'm sure there will be. With that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you.